They see this as the only way, really, to temper North Korea's ambition.
Diplomats seek to tighten money flow to North Korea. It's Wednesday, March 1st. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well online by logging on to our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Also ahead, does Donald Trump have a negotiating advantage with Pyongyang? Thailand in a standoff with a monk. Times aren't so golden in an Indonesian province. And good computer hacking. It starts right now on VOA Asia. Diplomats from the United States, Japan, and South Korea have pledged to further restrict funding for North Korea's weapons programs, especially targeting Pyongyang's illicit activities to gain revenue. The meeting came as China's State Councilor Yang Jiechi met with President Donald Trump and other senior members of his administration in Washington. He's the highest-ranking Chinese official to do so since Mr. Trump's January 20th inauguration. Korea Society Senior Director and Columbia University Professor Stephen Norper tells VOA's Victor Beatty that Washington, Seoul, and Tokyo are looking for new ways to dry up the cash reserves that the North so badly needs.
They see this as the only way, really, to temper North Korea's ambitions when it comes to missile and nuclear development.
Back in the tail end of the Bush administration, they went after revenue sources at banks. That really seemed to strike home to the North. Is that what they're contemplating?
The groundwork was laid by the Banco Delta Asia freeze back in 2005. It did seem to hit very strong and very personally at the regime. And that sum was relatively small, only $25 million. So there was a lesson learned there, and they're trying to explore new ways to try to tighten in terms of the restrictions on the North. Clearly, it seems that the naming of Kim Jong-un in terms of a referral to the International Criminal Court and the human rights issue, as well as these financial measures, are the two types of activities that seem to have elicited the worst North Korean response, meaning seems to have worked effectively.
The State Councilor of China, Yang Jiechi, happens to be in Washington. What message might the Trump administration deliver to the Chinese State Councilor?
Well, it's very clear through President Trump's tweets that he expects more out of China. He's made statements to that effect as well. And there does appear to be a resolve to try to get that relationship going with some seriousness on any number of fronts. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what the outcome of it is. No doubt North Korea is mentioned in the context of expectations of the United States. I'm not certain, Victor, exactly how much leverage China absolutely in the end has. The U.S. administration seems to think it has a tremendous amount, but Chinese officials say otherwise. They have also been very quick to put the responsibility on the current crisis over missile and nuclear weapons in North Korea back at the doorstep of the Americans. So we'll have to wait and see. It may be a long road ahead on this one.
Stephen Norber said all three countries, the United States, South Korea, and Japan, know that despite six rounds of UN sanctions, the North has been effective at pushing off the impact of those sanctions and continues development of their weapons programs. He said they're able to do this through arms sales and front companies that are scattered across Asia. Our top story and much more is found on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Malaysia to file murder charges in North Koreans' killing. South Korea urges UN to refer DPRK leaders to the ICC. Pakistan hosts regional summit under tight security. Tough rhetoric prompts Indian students to reconsider plans for U.S. education. In New Year message, China's Panchen Lama praises religious policy. And this programming note, VOA Asia will carry President Donald Trump's address to a joint session of Congress live at 2 hours UTC on VOA Asia Facebook. Expanded coverage of all these stories and more on Facebook and voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. Despite U.S. President Donald Trump's comments that it may already be too late to strike a deal to halt North Korea's advancing nuclear program, advocates for engagement like Moon Chung-in, a professor emeritus at Yonsei University in Seoul, argue that Trump is uniquely positioned to reach a breakthrough toward resolving the increasingly tense security situation on the Korean Peninsula.
I have a certain hope. I have some kind of hope of President Trump that he would come up with quite unimaginable deal with North Korea that could really bring peace on the Korean Peninsula.
President Trump has emphasized bolstering U.S. military capability in the region, including deploying the THAAD missile defense system in South Korea to counter North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's efforts to accelerate the country's nuclear and missile development capabilities. In the last year, North Korea conducted two nuclear tests, a satellite launch using banned intercontinental ballistic missile technology, and fired numerous short mid-range missiles from submarines and mobile land-based launchers. Beyond Beijing's recent ban on all North Korean coal imports, the Trump administration has called on China to apply more economic pressure, but few think that Beijing is ready to abandon its ally. John DeLury, an associate professor of Chinese studies at Yonsei University in Seoul.
I think the mistake will be to say, oh great, the Chinese are shutting down the border, they're going to solve the problem for us. That's the wrong way to understand what's going on.
The Obama administration's policy of strategic patience, which relied on increasing sanctions and diplomatic isolation, failed to pressure Pyongyang to suspend its nuclear program. Pyongyang's relentless efforts to develop an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of delivering a nuclear warhead to the U.S. mainland adds a new urgency to devise a new strategy. Analysts say there are no good military options to take out the North's nuclear and missile facilities without triggering a deadly counterattack on allies South Korea and Japan, and even possibly starting a full-scale war. So engaging North Korea is the only realistic way to reach a peaceful resolution. But, as Moon Chung-in says, that would require the Trump administration to take the initiative.
If the U.S. doesn't move, Pyongyang will not move, then stalemate will continue. The stalemate could become much more risky and dangerous.
China's ban of North Korean coal and informal talks that are being organized between former U.S. officials and North Korean representatives could offer Trump an opportunity to open a new channel of dialogue. John DeLury says Trump, who sees himself as a dealmaker and who's been critical of his predecessor's past failures, could be willing to break with the past and try a more unconventional approach.
Donald Trump is uniquely positioned to move on that, and he's strangely immune to criticisms that would stop a Democrat or a Republican dead in their tracks before they would dare engage Kim Jong-un.
Any deal to get even a temporary nuclear freeze from Pyongyang will require real concessions that could include the suspension of U.S.-South Korean joint military exercises and later more incentives like a formal peace treaty and other security guarantees and economic assistance to reach the ultimate outcome of a nuclear-free Korean peninsula. Our thanks to VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Padden and Yoomi Kim for sending us this report. Happening now in Asia, two female suspects in custody will be charged with the murder of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother. Malaysian authorities say the women smeared VX nerve agent on Kim's face. A high-level North Korean delegation has arrived in Malaysia to claim the body. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The Thai military government, in a test of political resolve, is in a standoff with monks from an influential Buddhist temple that has placed religious politics at the center of national debate. Analysts say the Wat Pra Dhammakaya Temple has become a battle for influence over Thai Buddhism, the religion of over 90% of Thailand's 68 million people. The temple's considerable influence, including within the Buddhist hierarchy, is seen as challenging Thailand's more orthodox Buddhist community, say political analysts. Hundreds of police and officials have been sent to the complex since mid-February, creating a standoff with lines of monks and supporters. Gautha Maria, an advisor to Minidol University's Institute of Human Rights and Peace Studies, says the standoff is part of efforts, official efforts, to reform Buddhism and reduce Wat Dhammakaya's influence.
The way Dhammakaya is expanding, creating more and more followers, not only in the country, but also outside the country, and the way they very skillful administrators, they can organize the ordination of 100,000 monks, etc. You see, so there's a powerful organization behind with a lot of money there.
The charismatic abbot, 72-year-old Luangpor Dhammajayo, and the temple's considerable wealth have also drawn criticism. Devotees are reported to donate large sums to the temple to gain merit. Controversy caught up with the temple after a devotee, a senior member of a credit union, embezzled $344 million and then donated $42 million to the temple. The credit union official is now serving 16 years in jail over the theft, and the temple says it has repaid the credit union cooperative a total of $30 million in cash and checks. But Thai authorities say Dhammajayo must face charges linked to the payments as well as other charges. The abbot's legal team has told local media he was unaware the donations came from the embezzled funds. Political scientist Pattanen Watanayangorn says that an offer has been made to Dhammajayo to present himself in court and fight the case, but it was rejected.
So I think the government is not in a position to back away from implementing the law. But of course, weeks ago, as you know, there were attempts to make sure that consequences will not be erupting from moving forward on these legal challenges.
He said the government has aimed to avoid a violent confrontation. Manala Havanovich, a former senior monk at the temple who fell out with Dhammajayo's teachings after 17 years, thinks that the abbot is still in the temple complex and has avoided capture so far.
I don't think that the standoff will be that long. Maybe a week or two, that is the longest time, I think. They have to disperse the mob at the local marketplace in protest of the government, right? And then they have to remove the power line to the temple. So that's how they're going to do it.
Mano said the government still has the upper hand in the confrontation and that there's no way for the abbot to escape. The Dhammakaya Temple is one of the most influential in Thailand, and it reaches devotees throughout Thailand and also overseas. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palkov.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Cambodia's government has threatened to take action against media outlets it says undermine the country's peace and stability. The government cited U.S. President Donald Trump's criticism of the press as justification, and the action includes The Voice of America. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Mimika Regency Province in Indonesia's West Papua region is home to roughly a million people. A single U.S. company there accounts for over 90% of its gross domestic product, and the company is now laying off tens of thousands of workers. Reporter Krithika Veragur tells VOA Asia's Steve Miller how a disagreement between the Indonesian government and the company is affecting more than just bottom-line profits.
Freeport-McMoRan is an American mining company, and it runs the world's largest gold mine in the easternmost Indonesian province of West Papua. And it has a long history with the Indonesian government, basically that dates back to the Suharto military dictatorship. And because of that history, the company is now the largest employer in Indonesia. But since the dictatorship collapsed and under a series of democratically elected presidents, the Indonesian government has grown more and more wary of the special relationship that this mining company has had in the country. And it passed a few protectionist laws in the past 5 or 6 years that are coming to bear on this. And Freeport had a 30-year contract that runs till 2021. So they thought they would be basically above these regulations until then. But Indonesia decided to kind of press its hand and try to levy those obligations now. And they really butted heads on it. And Freeport went ahead and froze the mine, which is responsible for 91% of the GDP in the province that it's located in, and laid off tens of thousands of people, and it's created a potential crisis in the region.
So you say that, you know, they stopped production of the mine back on February 10th, laid off thousands of people, roughly 10% of its foreign workers. What's been the impact in the area, and what are some of the concerns that local residents have?
Well, because of its decades of involvement in the region, it's actually, Freeport is one of the main providers of social services there. It runs 2 hospitals, it gives a lot of scholarships, and it employs, you know, the vast majority of native Papuans who live there. And now that they're getting fired, they're getting extremely worried that not only are they going to lose their livelihoods, but they might lose all the social services that come along with it. And this has potential to totally derail the economy of this province, which is historically underdeveloped and quite poor and relies on this very specific industry for almost, you know, all of the economic activity there. So people are really worried, and Indonesia has not given any assurances to these people that it's going to compensate them if they lose their livelihood. So that's what they're worried about.
Does it appear that things are set in stone, or could they eventually get back on track and this company rebuild the economy there?
It could certainly get back on track. I mean, the thing is that Freeport drew a line in the sand earlier this month saying that after 120 days, if Indonesia doesn't drop its request, it's going to press arbitration, and that will get pretty messy fast. But it's, of course, possible that they won't even get to that point and they'll reach an agreement before then.
Thank you so much for bringing that story to us. Krithika Varagor is our reporter in Indonesia, joining us by phone. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Developing at this hour in Asia, a land swap deal by South Korea's Lotte Group to enable Seoul to deploy a U.S. missile defense system has drawn calls for a boycott in Chinese state media. The state-run Global Times advocated further restricting South Korean cultural goods and entertainment in China. VOA keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, with the advent of the digital age, anyone with a good idea and the ability to code can produce innovations that were not possible before the internet. Taking that idea to the next level and ultimately forming a startup takes a team of people with unique skills. And forming those teams often occurs at an event called a hackathon. VOA's Elizabeth Lee looks at one company that organizes hackathons around the world.
Among all the applications on a mobile phone, there's a good chance a few were created by hackers at a hackathon.
A hacker is anyone that can take limited resources or be in any type of constraint, time constraint, resource constraint, knowledge constraint, and create something from nothing or something from very little.
That was Sabine Ali's life growing up as a child of Pakistani immigrants. She lost her father at a young age.
You know, I lived in a house with a single parent, 3 kids, and we had to figure out how to do a lot of things on our own.
Ali applied her ability to innovate to her company, Angel Hack, which holds events around the world called hackathons. People with inventive ideas or hackers can attend and write computer programs and code together.
Somebody who works in a larger organization, 9 to 5, building the same app day after day, can come and build that thing that's been keeping them up at night. Or somebody like me who's an entrepreneur who has this amazing idea, I know how to make money from it, I know all the customers and the clients, but I don't have the tech resources to be able to put it together. I needed this type of, you know, outlet and support and forum.
Angel Hack has organized hackathons in 92 cities globally, where hackers form teams and compete for the best idea and product.
The week starts on
a winner October from each event is mentored by Angel Hack for 12 weeks through virtual sessions like this as teams try to get funding and turn their innovations into startups.
Nobody from Sri Lanka has been exposed to something like this, and it really grew as a team and as people these 12 weeks.
The top teams, including this one from Sri Lanka, are picked for a trip to Silicon Valley, where they will stand in front of hundreds of investors to present their startup.
We actually almost had a culture shock coming here and looking at this big grown-up people's startup ecosystem.
Do you guys mind giving me a very spontaneous elevator pitch?
That open collaborative environment is the defining feature, I think, of Silicon Valley itself. And that culture kind of seeps in the atmosphere and how everybody behaves even when you're here. For any culture, we've found that once people do become more collaborative and more open with whatever they're working on, it improves their business, and that translates globally.
Among Angel Hack's success stories, one team raised $10 million and two others were acquired by Google. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, San Francisco.
Here in the United States each year, the president gives a joint session of Congress a State of the Union or an assessment of how the United States is doing. Well, for a new president, they don't do that. They just give an address to the joint session of Congress. That's going to happen a short time from now at 2 hours UTC. And you can follow it live on VOA Asia Facebook as President Donald Trump addresses a joint session of Congress. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you wherever you go. It's real easy. All you have to do, a couple clicks, and it'll come right to you. You can also find us streaming anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and we also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Jimmy Cook, and managing editor, Diane Gal. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and European Union continue to share similar goals to promote peace and prosperity through freedom, democracy, and the rule of law. And to those objectives, said Vice President Mike Pence on a trip to Brussels, we will remain committed. The United States and EU economies are the world's largest, accounting for half of the world's economic output. Transatlantic commerce and travel for business and tourism support 14 million jobs on both continents and improve the lives and well-being of all of our citizens. We reaffirm our commitment to free, fair, and flourishing economies that undergird our success and to cooperate in achieving that, said Vice President Pence. When it comes to terrorism, said the Vice President, we must be strong and we must be united in our efforts to confront threats to Europe's security and stability. This will require greater coordination and intelligence sharing among EU member states and between the EU and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. In addition to confronting terrorism together, clearly we must stand strong in defense of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of nations in Europe. In the wake of Russian efforts to redraw international borders by force, we will continue to support efforts in Poland and the Baltic states through NATO's Enhanced Forward Presence Initiative, said the Vice President. And with regard to Ukraine, the United States will continue to hold Russia accountable and demand that Russia honor the Minsk agreements, beginning by de-escalating the violence in eastern Ukraine. At the same time, the United States will search for new common ground with Russia, which President Trump believes can be found. The United States' commitment to the EU is steadfast and enduring. We are separated by an ocean, said Vice President Pence, but we are joined by a common commitment to freedom, to democracy, and to the rule of law, and we're confident that that bond will endure and grow.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.